How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Today is Slammiversary Sunday. And as a result, I would, in fact, like to offer a great congratulations to the anniversary of me! It's my birthday today, everybody! June 12th, 1975. I also like to add that today is the 3-year anniversary of the Figure Four Online Wrestling Observer Newsletter merger, which, of course, we talk about every week, WrestlingObserver.com. And today is the, I'm not very good at math, but I believe 16th anniversary of the founding of the Figure Four Newsletter on June 12th, 1995. A lot of big anniversaries today. And yes, unfortunately, all of these things are being celebrated by me sitting down and watching TNA on pay-per-view tonight. It is the TNA Slammiversary show. After 9 years, TNA is not only still in business, but after 9 years, TNA is still in business, and it is headlined by a match featuring Mr. Anderson. We're going to talk about this show in detail tonight. It's going to be kind of hard because there's no Wikipedia page for Slammiversary. Apparently, it has been deleted. We'll talk about that as well. But we're going to run down all the matches on the show. Starts immediately after this program goes off the air. And the good news is I'm having a birthday party this afternoon, and I'm having some friends over. And so I'm actually going to have people joining me for the first time in, I can't even remember how long, to watch a TNA pay-per-view. So, as a birthday present to myself, I have purchased a show in high definition. We're going to talk about that. Plus, last night, a real birthday present. I went to Vancouver for the UFC 131 event. Live, this show was great. Not like the best show of all time. It was not UFC 100, but it was certainly better than UFC 130 in Vegas. There were some great fights. There were some great moments. We'll talk all about that in detail, plus a bunch of other UFC and pro wrestling news, including 5-round fights in UFC for every main event. Diaz has vacated his title in preparation for the fight with George St. Pierre. Coming up this October. Talk about the Capital Punishment pay-per-view, the Strikeforce show this weekend, Kota Ibushi, the latest on Super Hate, UFC talks with G4. I've already run out of time. We'll be back after the break to talk all of this stuff. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts here on my 36th birthday. And Mike, the Slammiversary show is tonight, the birthday of TNA as well, an appalling fact, but it is true. And as you noted before we went on the air, there's no Wikipedia page for this show. And I believe what happened, and perhaps if anybody listening to this right now is one of the folks at Wikipedia or something like that. A couple of weeks ago, there was a page for this show. And I guess they do a deal where things are up for deletion. And I guess they were arguing that the show page should be deleted. I guess because not enough matches have been announced yet. So apparently the page actually got deleted, and now that we have all the matches, there's no page for Slammiversary 2011 for TNA, which is actually, this would only happen at TNA.
That's true, actually, yeah. You know, when your go-home show, after your big revolution, after you explain that the numbers don't lie, when your go-home show to this pay-per-view actually drops, That says a lot, too.
Well, I will say...
It's a hell of a birthday present you're giving yourself. I like how you're doing this in HD. Why? So you can see this in all its wonder and clarity?
Well, I'm doing it because I'm having friends over, you know? It's bad enough having to watch TNA, but inviting a bunch of friends over and then watching it in standard definition, what kind of a host am I?
Well, that's true, and at least maybe because you haven't seen it yet, because you were there after your hosts fall asleep at about 11 o'clock or 8 o'clock your time, however that works there with the time zones, you can pop in a tape of last night's UFC and at least, you know, get the party back going again.
Well, that is true. I expect them to fall asleep before the show even starts, but we'll see what happens. It's going to be quite a party this afternoon. Now, the lineup for this show here, the lineup is available at the TNA website. Actually, it's up at Slammiversary.com. We're going to start with TNA today. Why not? Let's kick it off with this and talk about some of the matches here. I watched Impact on Thursday. I thought it was a horrendous show. I know I say that every week, but listen, everybody. The main event of this show is Mr. Anderson and Sting. And for those of you that don't watch TNA, what they did to set this up is last week on the show, they had Eric Young pin Mr. Anderson. Now, for those of you that don't watch TNA, Eric Young is the equivalent of Santino. So this would be, for example, if Randy Orton and John Cena were the main event of the next WWE pay-per-view. And 2 weeks ago on TV, Santino pinned Randy Orton. And then on this week's show, Sting got pinned in a tag match by Gunner. And Gunner would be the equivalent of, I don't even know, who, Michael McGillicuddy maybe? He's one half of the tag team champions in WWE. All right. Imagine Michael McGillicuddy pinned John Cena this week. So last week, Orton was pinned by Santino. This week, John Cena was pinned by Michael McGillicuddy. And on Sunday, we're supposed to care about seeing John Cena versus Randy Orton. I mean, preposterous. But that is what they did. Anderson got pinned by a comedy figure. Sting got pinned by a geek. And now we're supposed to want to see these two guys fight for the title in the 9th anniversary of TNA, which, quite frankly, is apropos. So, there you go. I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. I am not blown away by this particular match. Mr. Anderson in the ring, not much. Sting in the ring at his age. He's doing the best he can, but his best matches are on taped shows. There's a reason for that. So, we'll see how it goes.
And for the most part, you know, at least the TNA fan base likes Anderson. They like Sting. They like RVD. And that, between these three, have been going on now for a long time. And it took a long time to get to this point. It's really bad when, for the most part, those are three people that your fans generally like. And then they go out there and they just have matches that don't click. And I'm not expecting much out of this one either. And yeah, you know, again, I didn't watch TNA for the last 2 weeks. Obviously, I have not missed a thing.
Oh, you missed plenty. Just nothing good.
No.
We do have what they're billing as the final battle.
Why is this not the main event, by the way? When you know things haven't been clicking that well, and I guess maybe in their minds the Sting Anderson thing, I don't know why this would have to go on last when you have the Angle Jarrett thing. Why is this not the main event?
Well, the title is very important, Mike.
Oh, that wrestling matters.
Wrestling does matter. Now, I will say that only in TNA could you have a final battle where the culmination of the feud is a wrestling match. It didn't start as a wrestling match and then build to a stipulation match at the end. No, it started with stipulation matches, and now here at the end, it's just a wrestling match. And the good news is, this will be the best match on the show. I have no doubt of that. This may be one of the best TNA matches of the entire year. Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle, it's almost impossible for them to have a bad match unless it's just, like, horribly booked. I mean, if they just go in there, and if wrestling actually does matter, and if they just go in there and have a straight wrestling match, then there is a possibility that when this show is over, I will not regret having spent $44.95 on this show. Now, I think they promised no Karen, or at least Jared is claiming Karen's not going to be there. My gut is that she is going to be there. And I certainly hope not, but we'll see what happens. If they just do a straight match and Kurt Angle wins, it'll be awesome. If they do anything else, I think I'm going to be really frustrated.
Now, are there medals on the line in this?
Yes, Kurt Angle's medals are not on the line. You would never know that from going to the website, since that's not mentioned, but that is the stipulation.
I would then think this would just not be the final battle then.
But it says the final battle, so it must be.
Obviously, this is probably, it is going to be the best thing on there, and it's been one of the reasons to tolerate. Obviously, you know, the sight of Jared and Karen rolling in on the horse-drawn carriage, and a lot of the stuff that they did, the dumping of the horse manure, I forget what movie that was out of, but, you know, doing some of the stuff like that, it's been okay to tolerate this, even though they've dragged this out, and it was supposed to be the end of this thing I don't know how many times now. Just because at the end of the day you get Jared and Angle wrestling. So to be honest, because of the fact that, and you know what, because it's for the medals and they won't talk about it, they'll probably have Jared win, and then that will probably be it for this, knowing TNA. But because of the fact that they're on the line and I can't believe TNA for anything, I think somehow Jared ends up with winning the medals, and I actually hope that this thing continues because at least I can tolerate watching them on pay-per-views.
We've got the X Division Championship, Kendrick versus Kazarian versus Abyss. Abyss is the champion. Random three-way, why not?
I was really hoping that they bring in Pierre-Carl Ouellette again as X to square off against Abyss, because, I don't know. Like, this is Kazarian slipped on a banana peel and losing the title to Abyss, which, you know, ended up ruining what was a pretty good match. I would figure Kazarian has got to win this because, I mean, Abyss is what he is. I mean, it's TNA Abyss. And Kendrick is goofy, so the only thing that would make sense is Kazarian winning, and I would hope that he would.
I'd already forgotten about X.
A lot of things, infamous X.
A lot of things to forget in the history of this promotion. Go ahead.
No, Cheeks. You remember Cheeks?
Oh, big fat guy?
Yes.
I remember Cheeks, yeah. Oh, the last 9 years. They should just do like a 3-hour pay-per-view where they just take like all of the memorable things from the last 9 years and put them together in 1 3-hour show. That I would pay to see.
Do you know what the title of it would be?
No.
A midget, a beaten off in a trash can.
Well, that is the defining moment of the first, 5 years of this promotion. I don't know. The thing is, like, if you told them to put together the best stuff, it would be the worst stuff.
Not flying Elvises.
Yeah, it wouldn't be like a bunch of wrestling matches. It would be like a bunch of stupid angles that went nowhere.
It would be that and Helix Skipper's cage walk. That's what it would be.
Well, they probably would put that in there. We've got the TNA World Tag Team Championships, British Invasion, the champions. Actually, they list them as the champions, James Storm and Alex Shelley. Those guys aren't actually the champions. Champions are Rude and Storm, but Shelley is replacing Rude. This, again, you didn't watch the show, but I just got to talk about this. Hopefully I can get this all out in the next 50 seconds. So they're doing the show, and the British Invasion comes out to watch James Storm and Alex Shelley versus Mexican America. And the British Invasion are sitting there, and I'm thinking, why are the British Invasion getting a title shot? Because I can't even remember the last time they've been on television. So, you know, I'm thinking, okay, well, that's just me. You know, they won't mention that, and maybe the fans won't think about it. So the very first thing Taz says is, you know, you guys haven't won a lot of matches lately. Then he goes, you guys haven't even been on the show much lately. So I'm thinking, well, why are they getting a title shot? So then in the match, James Storm and Alex Shelley screw up. Shelley accidentally kicks Storm. Storm gets pinned. Mexican America wins, which begs the question, why aren't they getting a title shot? These questions and more after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Before the break, we were discussing the British Invasion versus Alex Shelley and James Storm match for the tag team titles, which was set up on Thursday by Mexican America pinning James Storm and Alex Shelley in a tag match to set up James Storm and Alex Shelley versus British Invasion, who have not even been wrestling on TNA together in months. How? I don't know. I have no idea. Baffled.
Happy birthday. Have fun explaining that to your guests tonight.
I'm not even going to bother. Not even going to bother. We're just going to sit there and drink and laugh. That's what I'm determined to do here on my birthday.
Now, is Mexican, I would assume then, by what you're saying, that the Mexican-America team is actually going to be on the show then in some capacity?
No, they're not on the show at all. And, let me add, they did an angle on the program after Mexican America won where they confronted Hulk Hogan and they basically asked, why aren't we getting the title shot? Which is a perfectly valid question. And Hulk Hogan accused them of accusing him of being a racist and told him to get out of the room.
Did they?
Well, sure.
Oh.
I thought they had a great point. Why aren't they getting a title shot?
Because they did not march in Confederate outfits.
I'll give you a better one. So, Bully Ray, on the show on Thursday night, was facing Rob Van Dam in a match. Bully Ray against Rob Van Dam. So, as they're wrestling, down the stairs comes AJ Styles. AJ Styles is scheduled to face Bully Ray here at the pay-per-view here tonight. Now, in traditional wrestling booking, you know, maybe AJ would come out and Bully Ray would be distracted. And as Bully Ray is yelling at RVD, or as he's yelling at AJ, RVD comes up from behind and cradles him and surprises him for the pin. You know, that might happen in your average wrestling promotion. Not in TNA. In TNA, AJ Styles comes out, Bully Ray is distracted. RVD stays down. Bully Ray then turns around and picks up RVD. He starts pounding on him some more. He goes over to give him a big pile driver. Then RVD backdrops his way free, goes up and hits a frog splash. RVD pins Bully Ray. Clean! Somehow, this sets up Bully Ray versus AJ Styles, and guess who RVD is wrestling on this show?
Who?
Nobody! He's not even on the card! Yep. I can't make this stuff up.
Well, I'll say this. Jarrett and Engel, obviously, I would think would be the best thing on the card. I would think that Bully Ray and AJ Styles is, because Bully Ray has been great as Bully Ray, and AJ Styles is AJ Styles, and again, probably should be doing something more for this company than squaring off with Bully Ray. No offense to Bully Ray or anything like that, but regardless of all of that stuff, this is probably going to be, at least for me, what I would figure the second best match on the show.
See, here's the problem. This is what frustrates me so much about TNA. Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle is going to be great. I mean, if it is less than a four-star match, then they badly screwed something up. That's going to be a great match. Abyss, Kazarian, and Kendrick is probably going to be all right. British Invasion against Storm and Shelley. You've got Alex Shelley, James Storm, and Doug Williams all in the ring together. Brutus Magnus is even improving. So that's probably going to be a pretty darn good match. Bully Ray and AJ Styles, last man standing. I would bet you that's going to be a pretty darn good match. The rest of the show, Crimson Samoa Joe, Morgan and Steiner, and Angelina against Mickey. Take him or leave him. You know, most likely they're not going to be all that good. But the point is, let's just say the show is really good. All right, that's all fine. But if you watch the television, there is absolutely no reason that anyone would want to buy this show because the booking is preposterous. So it really doesn't matter how good your pay-per-view is if your TV is so bad that you can't make anybody buy your actual pay-per-view. I mean, when I look at this lineup, and largely when I look at what they did on TV to set this show up, I mean, no one's buying this show, let's be honest. I mean, it's not going to do the least. I mean, last month's show, I mean, that was a complete disaster. This is only a mild disaster. But you know, when you look at the lineup and everything like that, I mean, you know, there's got to be a way to make people want to see this show. And what they did is not that way.
No, but that's no surprise because they do this all the time. And especially this is more crucial because if you had any sense, you would look and go, okay, there was a UFC last night that was supposed to be, at least in your mind for most of the time, being Brock Lesnar right there. And then you have WWE having one a week after you. Yeah, you'd figure you would have taken more care of this too, but why? They've never done it before, so why would they do it now? They have to prove they can do it, and they didn't.
They don't know what they're doing. Then we've got the Knockouts title, Angelina Love versus the zombie, Mickey James.
The other way around. Angelina's the zombie.
Ah! It's the other way around. I forget who's a zombie in this storyline here. Yeah, Mickey James versus the zombie.
The person watching is turned into the zombie.
What I love about this is, first off, Angelina Love is a zombie, everybody. She's a zombie. She's been drugged against her will. That's the storyline. Where is Angelina Love's Kevin Nash to try and get in there and try to help their longtime friend?
Weren't the police busting up something with Kurt Angle and Karen Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett a couple weeks ago?
They only watched the main event segments on the show.
Ah, okay.
But just, you know, Kevin Nash, I mean, it's no secret in wrestling that Scott Hall's in real bad shape and Kevin Nash is doing everything he can to help his friend, right?
Yeah.
So meanwhile, here in TNA, Angelina Love is apparently in a similar zombified state. And the way TNA did the angle was her best friend, Velvet Sky, decided, well, even though I know you're drugged against your will, I am going to try to beat you up. Which failed, by the way. In a fair fight, the babyface got beaten up. But that leads us to this match. Angelina
Love.
She's
playing a zombie. How could the zombie have felt any pain?
Well, actually, that's what I'm fascinated with about this match here. Because Angelina Love, half the time, doesn't sell anything. Like she's a real zombie. And then the other half of the time, she inexplicably does sell things. So I guess it's completely up in the air whether she'll sell or not tonight. And I guess we'll see. Does she win the title? I say no. But does it matter? I also say no.
I'll say Mickey retains just because, well, no, you know what? I'll go with you. a zombie with the ladies title, fine.
They could call it the zombie title, since they've already renamed the X title, which I've already forgotten what they called it. The extreme title, that's right. 2011, and there's an extreme title.
Sure.
ECW has been dead for 10 years! How old is your son?
And you own no rights to it.
How old is young Avery?
Avery is 3.
So ECW has been dead for 3 times the number of years that your son has been alive.
Uh-huh.
And we've got an extreme title here in TNA.
And my son would rather watch Chikara than TNA anyway.
Do you think that, like, 10 years after TNA dies, people are, like, going to be paying tribute to it on random pay-per-views? I'd bet not.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's not true. That's not true, because if WrestleCrap ever gets a channel and starts running pay-per-views, I think they'll be very appreciated.
That's true. Crimson and Samoa Joe, they're trying to make Crimson into a star. And of all the places to try and make a man into a star, no better place than TNA. They're going to do the win streak gimmick with him. Samoa Joe had it for a long time in TNA. So now Crimson is putting that streak on the line against Joe. We'll see how Joe does with him. Crimson very green, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, at least it's Joe, as opposed to Scott Steiner or Matt Morgan or somebody like that, that you would need to make Crimson a star. But, yeah, it's... it doesn't matter. Crimson should win this. It would make no sense if he did not win this. So who knows? It could actually go that way. But, yeah, obviously he's going to be their next big star, and they never really know what they're going to do with Joe anyway. So, yeah, Crimson gets the win.
And finally, in the main event of this preview, Matt Morgan is going to be facing Scott Steiner. I believe this match was supposed to take place at the last pay-per-view, but Steiner got a better offer from an indie event. Think about that, everybody. So he skipped the TNA pay-per-view. This month he's back, and Steiner will be facing Morgan. This could be a fun match, provided it's no longer than about 3 minutes long.
I'll even take 3.5, and I want Scott Steiner to be a WWF 80s-style type cartoon character, because that's the only way this thing is going to keep my attention even for, a couple of minutes. Matt Morgan just, to me, got to a level and completely stopped. And I know there are people that are really super high on him. I don't know at this point how you can be. But Morgan should win this, but I do hope it's actually just an entertaining little cartoon, to be honest, and not anything really more than that.
I'd also like to note, just in some typical TNA comedy, the Slammiversary poster has 9 men featured on it, of which 1/3 of the men aren't even on this show at all. And the deal here says, Slammiversary 9 celebrates 9 years of TNA action. All your favorite Impact wrestlers will be featured, including Sting, Angle, Mr. Anderson, AJ, Hulk Hogan, Abyss, Joe, and Rob Van Dam! It was not, in fact, on the show. There you go, everybody. Slammiversary tonight on pay-per-view, immediately after this show goes off the air. If you are not purchasing the show, and God knows how you would not be, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of the website. The blow-by-blow! Actually, most likely he's not going to be doing that. But he'll be running down the results of all the matches. So you can check it out, find out who won, who did not win, who ran in, even though they're claiming no run-ins, swerves, and much, much more. All up at WrestlingObserver.com. And then later on tonight, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be back with our second radio show of the last couple of days. We're going to be running down Slammiversary in detail and talking all the news from the weekend and tomorrow's 3-hour Raw, which, by the way, just to prove that I'm not merely burying TNA for no good reason, and I'm an equal opportunity, what would that be? Burialist? Barrier? Undertaker? Anyway.
Undertaker.
On Raw this past Monday night, the main event of the show, Steve Austin was guest referee. He ended up becoming involved in the match and then counting the pin, at which point the guest GM reversed the decision, second guessed Steve Austin, and then proceeded to immediately announce that Steve Austin was GM for the next show. Preposterous! We'll talk about this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. So much stuff to talk about today. We're going to get into UFC 131 here in just a moment from Vancouver. Wanted to send out a special thank you to all of those who have sent in happy birthday wishes on my Facebook. Want to get out the Facebook plugs right now. We have two official Facebook pages for those of you listening to this program. My personal page is at facebook.com/official Brian Alvarez. That's facebook.com/official Brian Alvarez. My goal is 8 million fans or friends or whatever they call them on there. I want to beat John Cena. I hear he's got 7 million. I'm shooting for 8. I believe I've got 2,000 right now, which I got a ways to go. But quite frankly, I don't think that's too bad after a couple of weeks of promotion. So head up there and hit like on that page. And we've also got the official Wrestling Observer Live Facebook page. If you go up to facebook.com, type in Wrestling Observer Live Official, the page will come up. You can like that page as well. Tons of updates go up there all the time. Same with my personal Facebook page. In fact, I was doing a lot of posting and tweeting last night, which, by the way, is twitter.com/Brian Alvarez. You can head up there and check that out as well. But a lot of tweeting from the UFC 131 show in Vancouver, and there was plenty to tweet and Facebook about, as that show had, well, some absolutely horrible judging. And Dana White, after the show, ranted and raved about the judging sucks, it's ruining the sport, it sucks for the fans, it sucks for me, it sucks for the fighters, it just plain sucks. These guys have monitors. Clearly they're not working now. He was just going on and on and on, which is kind of funny because there were no monitors at UFC 131. There were monitors at UFC 130 in Vegas, and quite frankly, I don't think there was really any bad judging on that particular show. But this show had its fair share. And Mike, did you see 131, and what did you think about it?
I thought it was a really good show. I mean, obviously, you said being there, it was even better. And on TV, to me, it came across great. It's one of those sneaky little shows that, you know, obviously the pay-per-view number won't be grand or anything like that, like it would have been if Brock Lesnar would have been in the main event. But it's also one of those where if people start to nitpick it too much, you just, to me, have to throw it out completely. Because when you have a card like this with, you know, great, you know, money knockouts and awesome, you know, incredible fights where it's just guys throwing heavy lumber on each other repeatedly, and there was a lot of great stuff up and down this thing, and that's the thing you got to take from it. It was just another, you know, pretty much not a stellar card from top to bottom, but one where you completely got your money's worth out of the deal.
Well, the best way to talk about this program and to confirm what you said, I had a friend last night who lives near me, and he didn't go to the show because Brock Lesnar wasn't fighting. He was planning on going, but when Brock Lesnar pulled out, he pulled out. So he texted me near the end of the show and was very, very sad that he did not go. And my advice to him and my advice to all of you listening to this right now is that if UFC is coming to your town or coming near your town and you would like to go, but you're waffling back and forth based on the card, my advice is to go, because this is UFC, and it's not like pro wrestling where, for example, if you've got a main event that's Gunner versus Crimson, I mean, the chances of that being any good are minuscule because they're both very, very green. But with UFC, I mean, to get to the UFC level, you've got to be an acceptable to decent to good fighter. And so even on a show where on paper it doesn't really look like all that great an event, you never know how good a show is going to be. Like, it's impossible to know. I mean, some of the shows in UFC history with great lineups have not been great events. And some of the shows in UFC history like this one where on paper it's like, okay, well, Brock pulled out, Carwin Dos Santos, you know, maybe I don't know any other guys on the show. You know, a lot of casual fans looking at that card wouldn't know who, I'd say 80% of the fighters on the show were. But this ended up being a great show. You just never know what the show quality is going to be like in an MMA event because it's real and it cannot be controlled. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Take the chance if it's coming to your town because, you know, you may miss a show like this. It was good times.
And the biggest thing is because they're going to give you 12. You know, and you go to boxing shows, on the whole, it's about 8, usually. I think it's pretty much the average, even from ballroom boxing, you know, all the way on up. You know, they're giving you 12 here, and there's 12 different ways things could end, and odds are you're not going to get 12 craptastic fights. You're going to get some good, exciting stuff in there, and, you know, until otherwise, especially with for the people watching experience alone, because you see some interesting and some interesting clothed people that they go to some of these events, and with all the other, you know, gimmickry and stuff that they've amped up to increase the fan experience at these shows, yeah, I mean, if you get a chance to go out and see it, odds are you probably can. Now, in Vegas, where they're playing to empty crowds and stuff like that, I mean, I understand that. That's the home base, and there is a Vegas boxing mentality that takes over. And I was really actually surprised to see it at that show, because after the first preliminary matchup, when they panned back from the camera, it looked like there were 29 people there. And I just always think about how boxing is at the beginning of all of these big shows now, where people just pour in for the main events. I'm amazed that people are not sitting there and watching these shows, just because you never really know what you're going to get, and why miss that moment? I mean, there's always a show that's got like a Sakara fight. I remember at UFC 101 that I ended up having to leave on that one. But, you know, I'm stunned that it's gotten to the point now where on the first, second, third matches on these UFC shows that there's nobody sitting there watching them.
Well, 29 is obviously an exaggeration, but what is not an exaggeration is the show ended up drawing nearly 13,000. And for the opening fight on this show, I honestly don't think there was more than about 1,000 people in the building. I mean, it was remarkably empty. And by the time the main event rolled around, I mean, there were like almost 13,000 people in the building, but it seats at least 3,000 more than that. So this show did not sell out. It did not come close to selling out. The interesting thing is the tickets were doing fairly well until Brock Lesnar pulled out. And according to the calculations done by Dave Meltzer based on ticket sales, Brock Lesnar pulled out about 3 weeks ago, and in the last 3 weeks, they sold maybe 500 tickets. I mean, ticket sales died as soon as he pulled out. And again, yeah, I understand the big main eventer wasn't here on the show, but if you didn't go to this event and you had the opportunity, you really missed out on a real good live event. You know, I don't know how it came across on television. Apparently, from listening to people that watched on TV, it didn't come across quite as well as it did in the building. But this was a real fun show. Undercard was good. The main card fights, there were some real good stuff. There were some slobber knockers. There were some submissions. A lot of good stuff on this show. So if you missed it, sucks to be you.
Yeah, really. I mean, get the replay of it, because for the people that are saying it's not coming across well on TV, I'm not sure would not have come across well on TV, because everything that was awesome live was pretty much awesome watching at home. I mean, especially like the Maya Munoz fight, and, you know, obviously Dos Santos, you know, slowing up and having it go to a decision with Shane Carwin was rough, but I mean, that first round was fantastic, and you can't take that away. And I mean, I'm really surprised to actually hear people say that. I mean, again, for $50, did you get your $50 out of it when you compare it to things like TNA and other pay-per-views and even other UFC events, including January's this year? I mean, I don't think people are giving this one credit.
This main event, Shane Carwin, Junior Dos Santos, very similar, actually, to Brock Lesnar versus Shane Carwin, just the other way around. Junior Dos Santos laid a whooping on this guy in the first round to the point where a lot of referees would have stopped it. But Herb Dean did not. Carwin fought back to his feet like a monster and lasted all three rounds. Dos Santos, admittedly, after the fight, said that he got tired. He got tired because he hit the guy so hard and he couldn't stop him. And the key to this fight, to me, Dos Santos obviously got the victory, 30-27, 30-27, 30-26. One judge gave him a 10-8 third round, 10-8 first round, actually, and I did as well. I don't know how you could not have given that first round a 10-8, but hey, you know, bad judging. But the point is, he won, but at the same time, when they brought Cain Velasquez into the ring, after this performance, and this is not the first time that Junior Dos Santos has been tired by the middle of the second, third round or so, you know, going five rounds potentially with Cain Velasquez, I didn't come out of this fight thinking that Dos Santos had much of a chance to win at all, unless, you know, Cain's shoulder surgery really, you know, unless he can't really recover from that surgery, I don't see a healthy Cain Velasquez losing to Junior Dos Santos, which, I should add, is funny because at this moment, Junior Dos Santos is the favorite in that fight. Did you know that, Mike?
I thought they were pretty much a pick'em, but that actually even surprised me too, because after this fight, and I know he's coming off the shoulder, I don't know how you still don't make Cain Velasquez fighting in Houston. I don't know how you don't make him, it doesn't have to be a heavy favorite, but a slight favorite, absolutely.
I don't bet on fights. I've bet on one fight in my entire life. But I don't want anyone to listen to this and bet the house or really even any money at all. But let me tell you, if Junior goes into this fight as a heavy favorite, I don't know. That's Cain may be a man for me to put some money on if I were a betting man, which I'm not.
Well, Dos Santos, I mean, give Carwin credit. I mean, he landed on the ground. He was 22 of 38 in the first round, and they were all in a row from Dos Santos on Carwin's face, where that fight could have actually been stopped. But, you know, a lot of them just hit the arm, and hit the hand, and, you know, the Herb Dean let it go on. But again, I mean, just the fact that he tired in the way that he did, and Velasquez, who knows if he can go five with Dos Santos either, but I nothing inspired me about seeing this other than it's a good matchup to have for Cain Velasquez in Houston.
Kenny Florian and Diego Nunez was very similar in the sense that Kenny won the fight via decision in his first shot at 145 pounds, his very first 145-pound fight, and his very first cut to 145. He didn't even do a test cut. So he goes down to 145 for the first time ever. He loses the first round to Diego Nunez. Diego gets tired. Kenny ends up outlasting him and winning a decision, 29-28, 29-28, and 30-27. Don't even ask who gave the 30-27 to Florian. But regardless, he won. And now Dana White is talking about Florian surpassing Chad Mendez and getting the next shot at Jose Aldo. And again, like the main event, Kenny showed me nothing here that convinces me that unless Aldo is badly injured or past his prime or whatever the case might be, that he has any chance of beating Aldo.
No, I mean, I'll give Florian a little bit of a pass, obviously, because this is the first time he's dropped down like that. And it's amazing that, you know, when they said he's been the first guy in UFC to fight in four different weight divisions, that he was fighting Diego Sanchez and getting killed at 185 pounds. It is kind of amazing to see him at 145. I mean, Ethiopian kids run out to him and hand him sandwiches with the way that he looks. But, you know, he did have to get used to the speed of those guys, and even though he's a bigger guy, how he can use his body, and he seemed to figure that out as the night went on, even though it wasn't the most exciting fight. So I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass, and in a way, I would probably kind of make that if you had to put it on a pay-per-view. I would kind of... Florian's not a bad move, just because at least everybody knows who he is, but would it be necessarily fair? I don't think so, but from a promotional standpoint, it doesn't hurt my feelings, and I don't think this performance, even though it wasn't all that exciting, hurt it.
Then we had the Munoz fight. It was Mark Munoz and Damian Maia, and a world-class grappler, close to world-class wrestler, went in there and boxed for the first round, infuriated me. And we got a little bit of stuff on the ground here and there, but it was like, I don't know what people are thinking sometimes. But I understand Maya's stand-up has improved. His stand-up is much, much better. And Munoz as well. But listen, when jiu-jitsu is your bread and butter, take that fight to the ground and work to submit the guy, especially if that's what you're claiming your entire goal is in this year fight. But Maya ended up losing the decision. We'll talk about the scoring after the break. It was questionable. So coming up next, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking UFC 131, questionable judging. Damian Maia, Mark Munoz. We had one judge give the fight 30-27. They thought that Munoz won all three rounds. Myself and I would say 99% of the world, maybe more, thought that Damian Maia won that first round there. Dana White said that the judge that gave it 30-27 should be, and I quote, hit with a stick! That man is Nelson Hamilton. There were some other questionable decisions earlier on in the show. There was a man named Dave Hagan who thought that Darren Elkins won all three rounds against Michihiro Omigawa. I actually had all three rounds for Omigawa. I thought that, okay, first two rounds, close, you know, in a close fight, depending on what you're looking for. You know, you can't argue, but the third round, Omigawa beat that guy. He beat the crap out of that guy. So how you could give all three rounds to Omigawa, I have no idea, but one judge did. And it was not the only questionable judging up and down the show, and Dana White was very upset about it, and he's constantly questioning what can be done. And I think the answer, and, you know, I'm at Press Row, and I'm talking to other people at Press Row who know a lot about this sport, and even they have differing opinions about these rounds, especially close rounds. So the bottom line is, the only way to get rid of bad judging is guys have to finish fights or they have to be dominant during rounds. To me, it just has to come down to the fighters, because if not, it comes down to the judges, and you don't want that to happen.
That's why I laugh as an old boxing fan when people would say how different MMA is going to be from boxing. It's like, well, no, you're still going to have to be licensed by state athletic commissions, and bing, there's the problem. Unless you take judging in-house, there's nothing you can do with the scoring. There's nothing you can do with anything besides setting up an independent commission somehow that gets overseen where somebody trusts it, with guys who actually are judging fights on knowing what they're looking for. Dara, Hamilton, yeah, there were a couple of them last night that really stuck out. And Omigawa, to me, is the worst. But I guess we can talk about that being the next hour.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after the break, and we'll also talk about all of the news. Take some email questions as well. We got a lot of stuff coming up today here on Slammiversary Sunday. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We spent the first hour, we're talking about TNA Slammiversary, we're talking about UFC 131. Before the break, we were talking about judging, and I want to throw one thing in here very quickly. Again, as I noted earlier, my feeling is that in order to fix judging in MMA, you just need guys to finish fights. You need guys to go in there, and they need to fight to finish. They need to fight to finish. They need to fight to finish. Not fight to win. Not fight to get the decision. Not fight to not lose. They got to go in there and fight to win. If they don't, this problem is going to continue. And the reason for that, you mentioned the first fight on this show with the Omigawa fight. And again, the third round of that fight, the judge that thought that Omigawa lost that round, that guy was out of his mind. Now, with that said, the first two rounds of that fight were close. And they were close enough that sitting in Press Row, after the end of the first round, Kevin Ioli was sitting next to me and he said, "Who do you think won?" And he was asking other people, "Who do you think won that round? Who do you think won that round?" There were people that thought that Darren Elkins won the round. And there were people that thought that Omigawa won the round. Because it was a pretty close round. Same with round two. Now, in that fight, in that third round, if that goofy judge had not been there, or if that goofy judge had seen it the way that everyone else in the world saw it, a win for Omigawa, you still had the issue of, okay, if two judges saw the first two rounds for Darren Elkins, and all the judges saw the third round for Omigawa, and the last judge saw all three rounds for Omigawa like I did, Darren Elkins still wins that fight. That's what happens when you have close rounds. And, you know, someone like me can look at it and go, "I thought that Omigawa won all three." But if another judge or two other judges think, "Okay, those first two rounds were close, I'm going to give them the Darren Elkins. Omigawa still wins round three." Darren Elkins still wins the fight. That's 10-point must with three judges over three rounds. It's just what happens. The only way that Omigawa is guaranteed to win that fight is if he goes in there and he finishes Darren Elkins. Or he just manhandles him for three rounds. So we'll talk more about this after the break, get Mike's thoughts, and more. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. We've got TV show reviews. Dave Meltzer is going to be reviewing the Slammiversary show live starting at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 Eastern on the front page of the website. That's in just an hour from now, in fact. And if you like what you hear, if you love this radio show, if you love Wrestling Observer Live, and you only get to hear this show one time per week, you are missing out. Tonight, a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio with myself and Dave Meltzer. We had another edition last night. We've got another edition tomorrow after Raw. Last week, we had a Figure Four Daily featuring Conan, which we've gotten rave reviews for. We do radio shows. I personally do probably 7 to 10 radio shows every single week. On the website itself, we do anywhere from 15 to 20 with all of our other radio hosts, including Mike here, Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. If you've got a commute, if you've got a job that you find perhaps insufferable and you take every opportunity available to listen to your headphones, whether it be music or anything else, if you've got a gym membership, for example, and you go on the treadmill, you want something to listen to, we hear from people that go on the subway, they listen to these shows everywhere. If you love this show and you want more, WrestlingObserver.com, the members area is $10.99 per month. That's it. $10.99 for an entire month. When you sign up, you not only get all of the new radio shows, we're going to do a bunch of them this coming week. As noted, we've had a bunch of them over the last couple of days. Not only do you get the 15 to 20 brand new shows we do every single week, but we have an archive. As noted, it is the anniversary today of this website. This website was founded, in fact, on June 12th, 2005. Did you know that, Mike? June 12th, 2005. We've now been around for 6 years. And do the math. 15 to 20 radio shows a week, 6 years. That's thousands of shows, tens of thousands of hours of audio. It is all available if you sign up right now. If you pay your $10.99, you not only get all of the new shows, you get every show we've ever done in the history of this website. Every edition of Wrestling Observer Radio, every Figure Four Daily, Adam and Mike, Big Audio Nightmare, Tough Talk, Doc Young and Les Thatcher, the list goes on and on. All of these shows are available for you right now, tens of thousands of hours of audio. You sign up today for $10.99, it is impossible for you to get through every available piece of content on this website. In fact, I think if you signed up for a full year and listen to every single show 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I'm not sure you could get through all of the audio in a full year. So no shortage of stuff to listen to. If you love this show and want more, WrestlingObserver.com. Sign up. And I guarantee, I promise you, if you love this show and you sign up for the website, you will not regret it. That is a guarantee. So sign up at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, we were talking about judging. What are your thoughts on guys finishing fights? I know it's not possible for guys to finish every fight, but is this something that perhaps the fighters can be encouraged to do so as not to fall victim to horrible judging?
Well, they have that inspiration already with the knockout and submission bonus, which sometimes is far more money than they're making just as their base salary for taking the fight. So I think that, look, every fighter knows, unless you're the most uber of defensive fighters, every fighter knows you got to go out there and finish it. You can't leave it in the hands of the judges. I mean, everyone knows that at this point, but sometimes you're not able to do that. And from what you're saying, obviously, if all three judges saw the fight with Elkins winning 29-28, people still would have booed. People still would have thought Omagawa won, but it still would have made some sense. But when you announce a 30-27, which Dave Hagen actually had the thing scored, the only thing you can think, watching the third round, and to me it was watching the first round as well, the only thing you can think is, well, it's got to be for Omagawa. So you already have that planted in your head. You have, you know, Elkins looking there defeated. You have Omagawa, you know, like it should be in the bag. And with a 30-27 score, and again, maybe you shouldn't think that way, but you had to assume that that had to have gone Omagawa's way, and it didn't. And that's why there's such an outrage, and that's why people get so upset about it is, yeah, if Hagen would have won 29-28, close fight, hey, let's do it again down the line, something like that. But when you have that, then you have Hamilton later, and then I think he had Hagen with another one later. When that happens, it just, again, it seems to happen on, if not every show, almost every show. I mean, it's just, it gets frustrating, and there's nothing you can really do about it because of the way the system is set up. I just, the first round, to me, obviously Omagawa was showing a lot of random weird movement, but I don't see how he didn't win that round. I mean, the crisp punching out of that unusual stance, and then he was landing, you know, harder and sharper than Elkins was when Elkins was actually able to get him, but Elkins missed almost everything he threw, and even though Omagawa had a weird stance where he was kind of going back and he was kind of going in the flow of the punches, and somehow Elkins was not able to hit him, you know, at any point. I mean, it's not like he was flying back or making a motion where it looked like he was hurt or scared or anything like that. He would kind of back up, let Elkins come in, then push him right back out of the center again, where Omagawa, to me, won that first round. The second round, I thought, was far tougher to score. But again, even if he gave Elkins those first two rounds, he got blown out so bad in the last round that it does not make any sense, and it's a bad show for the judges.
There was one guy on Press Row that I talked to. It was very interesting what he said. I can't remember who he gave the first round to, but he was talking about Elkins, and Elkins is like bleeding all over the place, and he's like, you know, it is interesting when you see a guy bleeding like that, it leads you to believe that he's in far worse shape than he is. You know, you get a cut and there's blood all over the place and that sort of thing. And maybe if that guy's winning the round, maybe you don't give him the round because he just looks like he's in such bad shape. And meanwhile, I'm thinking, Omagawa does not have a scratch on him. This guy's face is all busted up and bleeding everywhere. Omagawa is winning!
That's the thing. If that makes sense. If Omagawa didn't land all that much, but he had real sharp punches and he busted him open in two spots. But on the other hand, Elkins, every time he touched Omagawa, was rocking him and looking like he was putting a little bit of pain on him. Then, yeah, you can say that a little bit, but that was not the case.
Any other thoughts on last night's show before we move on to some news?
Damian Maia and Dave Herman taught me everything I need to know last night. Dana White calls him Peyton Manning for his look-alike form, but he has taught me that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is completely worthless and you cannot win with it, and Damian Maia obviously heard that. The Maia Munoz fight, I thought, was really good as well, and Maia looked like a completely different guy, being confident and working his punching, coming out and shocking Munoz. Munoz still didn't know what he got hit with, and I don't think anybody at home that was watching could figure out exactly how hard that, I think it was a left, that seemed to stun him early. But, I mean, Munoz, I think, did a great job, and obviously you didn't hear this on the telecast. There's very few people, obviously, that are out there that could possibly be put against Anderson Silva would anybody could possibly believe it. And I'm not saying that Munoz is one of those guys, but with this win and the way they were building him up as far as his wrestling skill and how, you know, he's the guy that people go to train with, they did at least do a good job as far as whether they meant to do it or not, really, I thought getting Munoz over far more than he was coming in.
You know, I'm very frustrated with the jiu-jitsu in MMA of late. I just, you know, I practice jiu-jitsu myself. I'm not one of those guys that thinks that, you know, jiu-jitsu is this complete fighting style, and nowadays a pure jiu-jitsu fighter can go in and beat everybody in UFC. I mean, that's... You know, it's preposterous nowadays.
It's proven wrong.
Yeah, Hicks and Gracie cross-trained, for crying out loud. But with that said, if you're like an outrageously good jiu-jitsu practitioner, which Damian Maia is, I am so sick and tired of seeing guys learn a little bit of stand-up and going in there and deciding they're going to show everybody what good hands they have. Okay? Yes. Obviously, it's important. It's important to be good at everything. Okay? But if you're great at something, go in there and do what you're great at. You know, use your stand-up to negate somebody else's stand-up, and then get the fight to the ground and do what you're best at. And there's so many guys nowadays that they're great at jiu-jitsu, but their whole game now is, oh, I'm gonna stand and bang with so-and-so. And you see these guys dropping like flies. It's like, okay, well, you know, if that's your thing, that's what you want to do, then that's what you got to do. But to me... And I'm not just saying this about jiu-jitsu. I mean, if you are a great kickboxer, if you are great at kickboxing, then and you learn a little bit of jiu-jitsu, don't go in there and start going to the ground with guys and getting beat, okay? Go in there and use what you know on the ground to not get submitted, and then stand up and beat them at your game. That is the game. The game is to beat people at your game. The game is not to go in there and play everybody else's game because you've learned a little about their game, because we see guys dropping like flies when they do that. And Maya just should not have lost that fight last night. And this is not taking anything away from Munoz, but Maya should have been able to win that fight last night, and he didn't because he largely went in there and he did not play his game. We'll talk a little bit more about this. We'll get Mike's thoughts after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 40 minutes or so. Here on my birthday, 36th birthday, what a day it is today. Here on
the air. Brian, tonight at the party, will there be games like Pin the Tail on the Donkey?
I'm hoping we can just grapple in the grass. So when my friends at Box come over, I can stand up and stand with them and get beat up.
Wait. Grappling in the grass and Box. What are you doing at this party tonight?
I don't know what we're doing. I don't think there's going to be Pin the Tail on the Donkey, though. But we'll see. We'll see. We're talking UFC 131. I was ranting and raving. I'm sweating profusely here as I talk about this. But, you know, another thing I want to mention before we go to Mike, talking about guys playing other people's games. You know, last night on the show, there's a Donald Cerrone-Wagner-Rocha fight. And, you know, I ranted on and on about George St. Pierre and Jake Shields. And George St. Pierre, you know, he psyched himself out. You know, he believed the hype of Jake Shields. And this is not taking away from Jake Shields' jiu-jitsu. I mean, for God's sake, I just talked about how people need to use their jiu-jitsu. But at the same time, George St. Pierre is world-class in virtually everything. He was not going to get submitted on the ground by Jake Shields. And he was so scared of Jake Shields on the ground that he kept the fight standing. And he found himself, I don't even know how this is possible, getting beat up a bit on the feet by Jake Shields. Preposterous. So last night on the show, we had Donald Cerrone and Wagner Rocha. And Cerrone ended up destroying this guy, leg kicks. He just leg kicked him to death for three rounds and ended up 30-27, 30-27, 30-26. Those were the scores. Yes, a 30-26 round in that last round for Donald Cerrone. But Cerrone was sad afterwards because he admitted that he fell for the hype of Wagner Rocha on the ground. He thought if they went to the ground, Rocha was going to submit him, so he was afraid to go to the ground with the guy. And the ironic part of this is that the one time they had a scramble and ended up on the ground, Donald Cerrone nearly submitted Wagner Rocha. But that was not enough for Cerrone. He fell for the hype and he stayed on the feet the entire time. Donald Cerrone is great on the ground. Why did he not go down there and play his game? He fell for the hype. And Wagner couldn't get him on the ground, and I don't know. I was very disappointed last night.
To me, that was fine for Donald Cerrone, even though he's disappointed in himself for that, because he at least leg-kicked and punched the hell out of Wagner. So he at least was trying to go for a knockout, even though he was not going to go to the ground with him. And frankly, he was training for Matt Danzig anyway. Wagner Rocha goes in there, and obviously he's got, you know, the black belt in jiu-jitsu and everything. I mean, and Cerrone, it's not like they would cut him with a loss or anything. He's in their long-term plans. He's a character. You know, he can talk a little bit. He's got his little gimmick from the WEC, the whole cowboy thing. But still, he didn't want to go out there and do anything stupid either against the guy who he wasn't sure about. And again, he went for the knockout. He did his job, even though he wasn't going to go to the ground with him. I don't think there's any fault in that. Now, when it comes to Damian Maia, you probably should have switched up things. I mean, obviously, in the first round, it's great what he did. But in the second round, when Munoz actually was on top of him and landing with 45 shots to his gut and just completely started to starch him out, then, yeah, maybe he should have switched it up there a little bit. But as far as the first round goes, you know, it was fine. But, yeah, I mean, he just completely didn't do what he is best known for.
I'm sick of people buying into the hype of other guys. I mean, if Cerrone was largely a kickboxer, that would be one thing. Then he would have done the right thing in this fight. Cerrone's got a lot of great submissions. He's really, really good on the ground. And he decided not to go there. He bought into the hype. You know,
so Brian, what separates superstars?
What separates superstars?
Guys like Michael Jordan and guys like that, that's what separates them is, you know, when they go out there and they do their own thing the entire time and they plow people over with it. And that's one of the pressures of having a bunch of eyes on you, too, where you start overthinking things and you don't want the loss on the big stage and some of that other stuff, too. I think that plays a part in it.
So that was a show last night. If you get a chance to check it out, as much as I ranted and raved about certain things here, the show was actually great. It was a real good show, real fun show.
Sam Stout actually knocked somebody out and thought he killed him.
I was right there. I literally, like, no more than 15 feet from the cage. I was in the front row of press row, like 10 feet from this guy. And when that dude's head hit the canvas, that was the most disgusting sound I think I've ever heard in my entire life live. They've got a guy that he's got two blocks of wood, and he bangs these blocks together to signal 10 seconds left in the round. It sounded approximately like that. And he stayed down for a long time. And for a while, I was kind of worried. I was like, this could be real bad. And it took him a long, long time to get Eve Edwards off the mat. And they finally did. He walked out under his own power. But that was a brutal knockout. And the knockout was like the least brutal of his problems. It was his head smashing into the canvas on this flat back bump. That it's one of those things, you see it live, you don't see it on television. And same with some of the leg kicks on this show. I mean, it's one thing to watch him and hear him on TV, but, you know, you hear him 10 feet from the cage, it's like, oh my God, you know, this is just unacceptable. And this head smashing into the canvas, this was unacceptable.
Yeah, this is a long time off, hopefully, for Eve Edwards, who is a old 34-year-old when you think about the fact that he's been around since 1997 and has had 60 fights or something like that. I mean, absolutely brutal. So, yes, time off for Eve Edwards. And Sam Stout, I'm glad he made fun of it in the post-fight press conference, because I was thinking going into this thing with, you know, being called Hands of Stone and everything, he's been to 7 straight decisions, and like 8 of his last 9 fights have gone to a decision. And I was stunned he actually knocked Edwards out.
I ranted a little bit about this earlier, but your thoughts. The show tomorrow, Raw, is 3 hours. Steve Austin is the guest GM, which a preposterous angle setting it up. But I don't even know why the show is 3 hours tomorrow, to be honest with you.
USA wants it that way?
They could even make it like a King of the Ring or something to make it seem like a special occasion.
Well, was there maybe another Tough Enough was planned or something like that, an episode? I have no idea. Maybe down the line or something like that. I'm not sure what came first, the announcement of this 3-hour show, or maybe the show was going to actually be one extra episode or something like that. And I don't know. Possibly. I have no idea. But I know USA usually likes these things, because even though it's not a great rating in the first hour, it never ever is, no matter what, for some bizarre reason. It's still going to do more than whatever the reruns are. So, you know, USA will be happy. Whether all of us will watching it, we'll have to see.
Capital Punishment is coming up, and the main event is John Cena versus R-Truth. And they were doing all right with it, I thought, until, till Monday, when Truth came out dressed, I can't say literally as a clown, but I went to Cirque du Soleil, and I'm sure that I saw somebody dressed like him at that event. He was a Confederate soldier. He had a sword. He looked like a geek. They acknowledged he looked like a geek. And I thought, this builds up the pay-per-view. How?
Now, I've been to Cirque du Soleil, one of the other ones before, and I didn't know a Quebec-based circus would have a Confederate soldier in there. But, yeah, that didn't make any sense whatsoever. And I actually thought that they were going to try to get himself, or try to get him out of the kind of like the crazy man, you know, over the top cartoon role that he's in, which, unless this is being done specifically to get people to cheer John Cena and want to make, you know, R-Truth as much of a meathead as possible, then I guess it's accomplishing its goal. But I mean, I thought they had a way out with him kind of playing the race card. He had McMahon right there where he'd say, hey, you know, get out of it by saying, I'll give you the match by bringing up some sort of racing. If they would have left it alone that way, it would have been fine. But the whole routine was goofy. And again, unless it's to guarantee that people aren't going to react to R-Truth against John Cena, I don't know what other reason that they're doing this for. I don't know what you do with R-Truth then after this, who, I mean, I always thought he didn't get enough credit when he was in TNA and everything, and he was Ron Killings, and it was just like, you know, trained by Manny Fernandez, guy's been around for a while. He's not Ric Flair, but I thought he always deserved more credit than he's getting, and I'm kind of surprised right now that he's getting as much credit as he is, because even though he's doing great with a cartoon role, it's just not working for me. And then what happens after this?
I am a big fan of Truth. I just think that, what they've been doing of, I mean, it's what they've been doing with it. They did it with Miz. They're doing it with Truth. I mean, John Cena is at a certain level. And to me, in order to create a credible challenger for him, you've got to bring somebody else up to his level. And that's like the exact opposite of what they've done with Miz and Truth. I mean, they've made him into guys that they can't steal a win. Well, actually, that's all they can do is steal a win. You know, they can't get a win. They look like geeks. They act like goofballs. It's I mean, at least they gave Truth a win over Ray that one week. But then it was back to being a clown. And I don't understand the mindset of creating challengers in this way, because there's I mean, really, what reason? Maybe this will change tomorrow. But as of last week on the show, particularly in a main event where Truth and Cena weren't even involved with each other in the finish, like, what is our incentive to buy this show?
Was it a full year since Batista's been gone? When did Batista go away?
Because
Alberto Del Rio, and I love Alberto Del Rio, but people are not responding to him in the way where you'd go, okay, he takes the belt off of John Cena, unless they do something fast with that, and it's, you know, I don't know what they can possibly do, but yeah, they have one Superman and then a bunch of other dudes who, they're not even thinking even a little bit longer term, like, you could use these guys one more time for somebody else before you make them just, you completely dispatch them.
I'm actually expecting Alberto versus Cena at SummerSlam.
I would, too. I mean, it would make the most sense unless you do something else. But, yeah, I mean, what else would you do?
So do you think they're going to kill off the R-Truth feud on Sunday? And then we'll have a two-month build, or maybe their first matches? And how do you think they're going to do it with Alberto and Cena?
I don't know. I have no idea yet. I haven't even really thought about it. But I just... As far as our truth goes, I think he is now, he goes dispatched, maybe he finds a partner and hangs out with Kozlov and Santino, but I just don't know, I don't think he's got much legs after this.
We're going to talk about this more after the break, and more news and email questions here on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Immediately after this show goes off the air, Dave Meltzer is going to be up on WrestlingObserver.com, doing live running play-by-play of the TNA Slammiversary pay-per-view. Dave and I will also be up later on this evening, a brand new radio show exclusively for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com, running down all the results of Slammiversary, all of the news, and much, much more. The big question from Mike, before we get to some of the email questions here, is, and some of the news, the main event of WrestleMania next year, John Cena versus The Rock. John Cena has promised it will be a title match. Do you put the title on anyone else this year? Do you put the title on Alberto Del Rio? And if you do, when do you put the title back on Cena?
Well, you know, the easiest way to do this, since they've already showed their hand with this or whatever, they're, you know, unless they have some intricate plan, you can take it off Cena at any point, as long as you, continue to not bring up Rock's name or anything like that, and you deflect enough of it away where, okay, if Alberto wins it at SummerSlam, that's fine. And even if people are ticking down, wondering when it's going to be, I would still just go ahead and do it at the Royal Rumble. I wouldn't try to do anything crazy or stupid or anything like that. I would just use it as a vehicle at the Royal Rumble to, you know, get media there and to build it up as much as possible to go, okay, here comes the three-month push, and, you know, it's Rock, it's Cena, we're building this thing back up again. So I think I would do it like that. I mean, again, you lose either way. Either people are going to say, well, you're pulling the belt off of him knowing you're going to just put it back on him again, or, you know, vice versa. If you don't take it off of him, it's like, you know, you have the same people saying, well, it doesn't matter who he faces anyway because he's going to hold on to it. So I would just go ahead and, with the way it's going to be, if you are going to take it off him with Alberto Del Rio, which, again, if people actually semi-believe it by that point and you could pull it off, great. I would have no problem with that. But then Cena wins it back at the Rumble, and you make that big promotional push to WrestleMania.
What I would have done, it's too late now, is, first off, if I were WWE, I would never do, especially this year, a pay-per-view with only 3 weeks of build. I would do everything in my power to make sure there were 4 weeks between pay-per-views. The first Raw after a pay-per-view would be a show built around reminding people – that at WrestleMania next year, it's John Cena versus The Rock. That would still leave you with three more weeks to promote your next pay-per-view. It would continue to remind people that that's the big match everybody's waiting for, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, starting in, like, April, you know, the first Raw after Mania, you do the angle. Starting and then in May, the first Raw after the pay-per-view, you maybe even have Rock there. You remind people of this match. Same thing in June. So then, you know, you keep reminding people, Cena versus Rock, title match at Mania, over and over, month after month. Then, at SummerSlam, Alberto Del Rio is the spoiler, you know, as noted. He wins the title. Now, you've got September, October, November, and December. You've got 4 months where you continue the storyline of John Cena has to somehow win the belt back from Alberto Del Rio. Okay, maybe you do a rematch in September and Alberto screws him and he's still got the title. Then Cena's out of the title picture. He's got to beat somebody in October to get the shot. Somehow he fails or there's some sort of screw job finish. November he's got to try again. Maybe Survivor Series he actually wins the shot. Something happens and he can't get it in December. He wins the belt, or maybe he gets a shot in December and there's one more screw job finish. And then the Rumble, there's a stipulation match and he ends up winning the title. And there you go. Easy 4 months of storylines, between SummerSlam and Rumble. And then you've got, Rumble through Mania to build a Cena versus Rock for the title. So I think that would have been the easy way to do it, but maybe they're doing the hard way.
Well, I would say that would make a lot of sense if we were still sitting there like we used to do, watching syndicated TV on a Saturday. But I think today's fan would actually ask probably a week or two into it, why doesn't Vince McMahon just walk out there in that goofy powder blue suit that he had on Monday night and just make Cena and Rock happen no matter what and somehow strip Alberto of the title because it's the best thing you could do for business.
You watched the televised version of UFC last night. Did they do a big push for the Strikeforce event coming up this Saturday?
You want me to be honest? I don't remember them saying one word. I was kind of, you know, ditching out between fights, so I don't know if they hyped it up. But if I recall correctly, the only thing they really hyped up was, God, did they say anything about next week's show? I know they mentioned the next UFC, but I, to be honest with you, I'll put it like this, it didn't stick out.
Certainly didn't stick out live. I don't remember a single mention of it. A terrible job, personally, in my opinion, of hype for this Overeem versus Verdum fight on Saturday night.
Overeem, Strikeforce is still around doing it themselves.
This is supposed to be a big show, and may as well not even exist. I'm not going to lie. I am not going to lie. On Thursday, I remembered that show was next Saturday, and only because I was planning a trip out to the beach, and now my trip is going to involve watching Strikeforce!
Without Gina.
Without Gina, that's right. So I'm just kind of baffled because, you know...
Maybe Josh Barnett is such a... What would the opposite of the Lucky Rabbit's foot be? And whatever, a hacked off vinegar pig's foot, Josh Barnett, maybe they were, you know, too scared of if they let word get out that this could be taking place, that somehow, some way, because Josh Barnett's involved, it could actually sink the company. Didn't Dana White blame him for two companies falling already?
Well, I'm sure, as Fedor, actually, that he blamed for killing a bunch of companies, but may have said the same thing about Barnett. A very poorly hyped pay-per-view, and it's baffling. I mean, UFC owns the company. You know, the idea should be to make as much money from Strikeforce as possible while it's still around, and the fact they didn't push it hard on last night's show. I mean, it's not even a pay per view. It's on Showtime. I mean, push the hell out of it on TV, but they didn't. And there you go.
You know, and you know what won't be mentioned on the Sports Business Dailies and on the Darren Revell Businesses of Sports and all these sorts of things that will be coming out. Multi-channel news this Monday. What won't be said is the fact that between this and between the fact that for whatever reason, whoever it was that made the decision that Nick Diaz would have to drop the Strikeforce title, and you've seen how they've been building these fights, and again, it doesn't need it, but you see how they built Shields, you see how they built the Koscheck-GSP fight, as far as the promotional stuff that's done with that. Okay, Strikeforce is gone. At least to me, that it's screaming that this is going bye-bye in a way, because for the UFC to go out of their way to not do anything last night whatsoever, and for whatever reason this decision is being made, which Gilbert Melendez will, for, you know, down the line have to make this decision, and other guys will too, of giving up the Strikeforce titles, you know, this just means to me, at least, it screams that, you know, bye-bye Strikeforce.
What are your thoughts on that decision besides bye-bye Strikeforce?
It's stupid. It's stupid, and I know I'm from an era that likes tournaments, you know, and shiny belts and things like that, and look, I know there should only be one title, and they were going to get to this point anyway, but while he's got it, while you have Nick Diaz, I mean, you can just have him separate. For those people who haven't seen Nick Diaz for a while, for whatever reason, because, you know, they've only seen him in somebody's corner in the UFC because they don't watch Strikeforce, with everything Nick Diaz gives you as far as, you know, and sometimes in a bad way, but he gives you so much. Have the bright, shiny belt on him. Have it be with everything else that's on top of this promotion that would come for him in GSP. Having that little, you know, shiny metallic belt on top of everything else is just another cherry, and I think it just, whoever's decision it was stupid, because if you say it was Strike Forces, there's a million one reasons why that's stupid. If it was Showtime, same way. If it's UFC, same way. If it's Spike, who knows? Doesn't matter. If whoever's decision it was, there's enough ways to argue against it where I think it's just ludicrous that you would have to do something like this. Makes no sense whatsoever.
How about the change to 5 rounds for all main events in UFC starting late summer, early fall with all of the new signed matches?
I believe that this would guarantee that John Fitch and Gray Maynard never main event on a television show ever. I think it's a good idea. It's got its pros and cons. You never know when your main event's going to stink. You never really know when a fight's going to stink. You have some ideas going into it, but, you know, you never really know. So if it's stinking for 3 rounds, then it's just going to have to stink for 5. I mean, there were ways, I guess, making number one contenders matches, and there are ways you could probably try to limit it. But, you know, I'm not – if the fight ends up being a – you know, a Shaolin Ribeiro ground war with Kawajiri or something like that, I mean, yeah, I'm going to want more of it. So I have no complaints with this whatsoever. When a bad fight's going to be bad, it's just going to have to be bad for an extra 10 minutes.
Let's get into some of the email questions here. I'd like to mention very quickly, since we didn't mention it last week, actually, we should probably talk about this in detail. Andy won Tough Enough. Kind of an important story. We'll talk about that in a second, but very quickly.
Really? Was it?
The more important story that I wanted to mention is Randy Savage, cause of death, diseased heart. That is from Lanny Poffo. We don't have details whether it was enlarged, left ventricular hypertrophy. We'll know all about that when the results of the autopsy come out, but it was a heart issue that resulted in him having a heart attack and crashing his car into a tree. But more on that in the coming weeks, but that is straight from his brother. And you, I'm sure, have a lot to say about Andy Levine winning Tough Enough, so get into it.
I don't have that much to say other than it makes the most sense, obviously, the way the TV show was going. There had to be some sort of drama, and they were building that up in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, they did a great job of portraying Luke as party boy, and great job as Andy is, you know, I'm doing it for my kids and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, the whole thing was completely fine with me up until even the Vince McMahon surprise, up until it was like time to put the mic in Andy's face. And, again, he was nervous, but it just didn't come off that well. And then, you know, taking a stunner would have been a fine rite of passage. Having, you know, Vince do what he did, I don't know. I mean, I just, maybe it's FCW for life for him, but I thought even though he didn't win and even though he looked like he may have been banged up and couldn't train in the for the finale as much, it just seemed to be like Luke was going to come out of this as possibly at least a name people are going to know. I don't know about star, but at least more of a name people would know.
Revenue here notes on Steve Austin's Twitter when someone said he picked the wrong person, and all this proves that Vince still loves big guys. Steve responded saying, "It was solely my choice." Do we know how much truth there is to that statement? I don't know. I mean,
Well, I mean, you saw Steamboat's reaction after the match. He was an FCW guy, so obviously they have something in him, too. And, I mean, look, no, with all that editing, too, I mean, you didn't really see what Andy could actually literally do. So, you know, I don't blame Austin for I would actually believe him.
But, you know, I believe him, too, and I'll say this. When they questioned all of the trainers, all three trainers picked Andy, which, if you're going to script it, why would you do that? You're just burying the other guy. I mean, you could at least bring some drama into it. I mean, you know, all three of the trainers picked him. Austin picked him. I thought he should have won. You know, it's not like this was some absurd choice to me.
No, I don't think it was at all. I really don't. I think Jeremiah. I
really like Jeremiah.
Jeremiah and the Briscoes.
Awesome.
I'd be happy with that.
Yeah. This person says, do you guys think the business of pro wrestling is in a similar slump like it was in the early 90s? What spark needs to take place to get the business out of its current slump? I think the whole... I mean, we could talk about this forever. This is a bad question to ask with a minute left, but I will say this. I don't think that the wrestling business is ever going to be like it was again. I think 2001 was the beginning of a new era. I think that wrestling as it was prior to 2001 is never going to exist again for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is the way guys were brought up prior to 2001 is absolutely polar opposite how they're brought up today. And so what we have today is what pro wrestling is going to be probably for the next several decades, I would guess. And if you're looking for a time like it was before, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's done.
Feeder systems and improv.
Don't see it happening. I'm not saying wrestling is going to die, everybody. I just want to say this very quickly. Wrestling is not going to die, but it's not going to be like it used to be. Back in just a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Only got a couple of minutes left, and I'm sorry I read that email. That email, we could have talked about that for an entire show. You know, what can bring wrestling out of the current slump? Maybe we'll focus on that next week if there's not a lot of breaking news, although, quite frankly, next week we're going to have the big Strikeforce show, the supposedly big Strikeforce show, Overeem Verdum, the next round of the Grand Prix Heavyweight Tournament. We're going to have WWE Capital Punishment. We're going to have no shortage of things to talk about. But, hey, there's always WrestlingObserver.com. If you want to follow all of these stories over the next couple of weeks, maybe we'll talk about this in one of our other shows as well. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Again, if you love this show, I guarantee if you sign up to the website, you will not regret it. A guarantee. So, of course, later on today, it is the TNA Slammiversary event. Mr. Anderson and Sting is the main event of the show. Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett should have an awesome match. If you decide to check that out, it's going on the air like in moments. So you better order now. And there's, of course, a replay later on, 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific. Dave Meltzer and I are going to be up later on tonight talking about that event in detail. We'll go over all of the matches, talk about all of the news, talk about tomorrow's event. Also be answering email questions as well. You can always send those into mailbag at WrestlingObserver.com. We answer those on the air throughout the week on the website for subscribers. And, of course, tomorrow night is a three-hour edition of Raw. It is the final show before the WWE Capital Punishment pay-per-view, which is coming up next weekend. We'll be previewing that show next weekend on the program, as well as talking about the results of the Strikeforce Grand Prix, which takes place on Saturday night. I'll be doing the show from the beach, so we'll still be doing a live show, don't worry, next week, but probably it's not going to be in studio, but it'll still sound pretty good, best we can. So that's coming up next week on the show, and Mike, thanks again for participating here, as always. You can always check out more of Mike at WrestlingObserver.com. The Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare with Adam Summers talking all about Japan, independent wrestling, hockey, a bunch of other things as well. That's it from here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great Slammiversary. We'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.